Good evening. My name is Sam Rogers, and I'm a student project manager at the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues. On behalf of the Clark Forum, Campus Academic Life, and the Sociology Department, I'd like to welcome you to tonight's program, No More Suffering from Sweat. We've all heard about the sweatshops of the Industrial Revolution, the deplorable conditions and abuse of child labor. Unfortunately, in 2007, such factories still exist all around the world, where workers make clothing and other products that you and I buy almost every day. The shirt you are wearing or the gift you have given a friend for their birthday might have been made by women or children working in extremely hazardous conditions with little attention paid to their welfare, health, or safety. Carmencita Che Abad is a garment worker of 6 years in a sweatshop conditions in the U.S. territory of Saipan. During her time there, she experienced firsthand the dangerous conditions and inhumane treatment garment factory workers were subjected to. When Ms. Abad tried to organize the Garment Workers Union in order to empower her workers to achieve the better conditions and pay they deserved, her efforts were largely initially thwarted by the companies. Frustrated, Ms. Abad left Saipan for the United States in order to educate people about the prevalence of such factories in the world today. For the past several years, Ms. Abad has represented the garment workers of Saipan and from around the world through the group Global Exchange. Thanks to her efforts, progress has been made in securing better conditions and pay for some factories from 26 major retailers. But there is more work to be done. We welcome Ms. Abad here tonight to tell her story of pursuing her objective of providing better working conditions for workers in Saipan and elsewhere. At this time, I'd ask you to turn off all electronic devices. In addition, please hold any questions until the end of the presentation when there will be a question and answer session. Because we are recording this program and because some audience members are hearing impaired, please raise your hand and wait for the microphone to be passed to you before asking your question. Also, I would like to invite you to join continuing the conversation at 12:30 tomorrow afternoon in the Holland Union Building, side room 204. Where further conversation on this topic will take place. Now please join me in welcoming Carmencita Abad.
Thank you, Sam. To the organizers of this event, the Clark Forum, the Sociology Department, the students from what they call themselves Student for Social Action, and all the organizers, Ms. Jolie, Professor Director Heather, I forget your last name, Heather, forgive me. And again, I would like to say thank you. Actually, it's my second time to be here in Dickinson College. So again, I'll thank you for having me, and it's an honor. So my name is Carmencita, and my short name is Chi, and my last name is Abad. I do work now for Global Exchange. Like, I joined Global Exchange in January of 1999. So Global Exchange is a non-profit international human rights organization that exposes political, social, environmental, economic injustices around the world and then organizes grassroots campaign for a change, and we are based in San Francisco, California. Since our founding in 1988, we have worked to increase U.S. public awareness for global issues while building progressive partnership or building progressive grassroots campaign through international partnership. So we have four main areas or four programs in Global Exchange, in which one is the reality tours, which educates the public on international issues through socially responsible travel. Second, we have this fair trade, which helps to build economic justice from the bottom up through the sale of crops that generate income for more than 50 countries around the world. So we work a lot in what you call the cooperatives, or what is the other name of cooperative? Collectives. Another thing is we have this public education department in which produces literatures and videos and then organizes educational or workshops, aside from that, the nationwide speaking tours in which I am one of their staff. And lastly, we have this, what you call the human and global economic rights campaigns, which struggles to eliminate sweatshop overseas that make products, for example, U.S. companies, and to end the human rights abuses around the world. But before joining Global Exchange, eight years ago, I am a garment worker for 6 years at Saco Corporation, making clothes for The Gap and other U.S. clothing retailers in which in Saipan they could label it made in the USA. So I am an example of an individual who can prove that the accounts of sweatshop labor are not just allegations, but they are a true accounts of the horrible living and working conditions there where I used to work for 6 years again, making clothes for The Gap, another U.S. clothing retailer. Who are you knows where is Saipan is located? Who among you knows where that is? Nothing. So Saipan is a U.S. territory in the South Pacific. Sitting in the middle of nowhere in the South Pacific, it is a beautiful, beautiful island in the Pacific Ocean that our neighboring U.S. territory to is Guam. And we are 4,000 miles away from Hawaii. So Saipan is a U.S. territory in the South Pacific, which has a similar status of Puerto Rico. The Commonwealth was established in 1978, wherein the United States government agreed to the Northern Marianas Island, in which Saipan is the capital, to set up its own minimum wage right now for $3.05 an hour. No, 15 cents. Before, when I left in 1999, it's $3.05. Like last year, they increase it into $3.15 an hour. Aside from that, guest workers were also being implemented in Saipan. So, as I've said again, a 1 year work permit for a guest worker like me, and lack of tariffs and production quotas in exporting the goods here in the United States. In Saipan, workers were being imported from China, especially in the northern part of China, which is close to the boundary of North Korea. They call that town Jilin in China. Workers from the Philippines. Workers from Thailand, Bangladesh, Vietnam. And then I went to Saipan through a recruitment agency wherein I paid $2,500 before I left in 1993. But the other nationalities that I've mentioned to you earlier paid from $5,000 to $10,000 just to get a job in the garment factory. But the hardest point in here before the Chinese workers have to leave China, they are being forced to sign a secret agreement known as the shadow contract, in which they have to waive their basic rights. First, they don't have the right to join in religious or other organizations, just like a union. Second, they were not allowed to complain, even though they are not getting a time and half pay. And lastly, women are not allowed to have their families. Or I will say, their contracts are not being approved because of being pregnant. So after suffering the island's intolerable working and living condition for 6 years, I tried it and attempted to organize the first Saipan Garment Workers Union. So when the factory management learned about my organizing efforts, they began an intense campaign against the formation of the union. They threatened employees that they would shut down the plant and move down elsewhere. And lots and lots of intimidations resulting to the loss of union election by just 5 votes. The factory management tried to silence me, but I fought back. No worker should be treated like a slave. And because of my attempt to organize my co-employees inside Sako Corporation, Sako Corporation retaliated by not renewing my employment contract first time in 5 years. So to prevent the loss of my job, I took the case to the United States Equal Opportunities Commission. So the EEOC then obtained an injunction in the federal court prohibiting Sako Corporation to fire me while the case is still ongoing investigation. I won the case in 2001. On February 14 of 1998, I filmed the actual living and working conditions of my co-workers in the island of Saipan. I wore a hidden video camera for ABC News 2020. The camera is very tiny, like this, and very thin. And I just carried it in the batteries in my waistline. And then the lens of the camera is as small as a point of a needle. And then I filmed the actual working and living conditions of my co-workers. It was aired here in the United States March 13 of 1998, which was entitled, "Is This the USA?" And then question mark, which was anchored by Barbara Ross and Brian Walters. And I'm proud of my role in shedding lights on labor abuses in Saipan. On January 13 of 1999 again, I came back in the limelight. 3 separate lawsuits were being filed on behalf of my co-workers in Saipan who worked under sweatshop conditions in the factories that sued clothing for major U.S. clothing retailers, such as The Gap. 4 organizations, including Global Exchange, filed the lawsuit, alleging that these retailers misled the U.S. public and then if they said it is made in the USA, it should be sweat-free. And I played an instrumental role in forcing 26 major U.S. clothing retailers and subcontractors. The settlement, they settled for $20 million to improve the garment factory conditions in Saipan. The settlement also established to pay back workers' back wages, public education efforts, and to create an independent monitoring system to prevent the future labor abuses. For me, it's a great thing that happened because it pushes an envelope on how workers like me, consumers like you, can press these retailers and contractors to be responsible under which clothing are or conditions are this clothing are being made. So would you want the companies, who are they and who were the ones who settled the lawsuit? Okay. People are nodding their head. Okay, here we go. Gap, Abercrombie & Fitch Company, The Limited, Lane Bryant, Woolrich, Sears, Oscars, Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein, Polo, Donna Karan, Liz Claiborne, Mervyn's, May Department Stores. What else? Target, Mervyn's. What else? Levi Strauss, JCPenney. Is it 26 already? Not really, huh? So I joined the Global Exchange, so those companies settled the lawsuit. And the conditions now after we launched the lawsuit has been improved in Saipan. And I joined Global Exchange Speakers Bureau in 1999 as their representative for anti-sweatshop movement. And I spent 7 years, more than 7 years, tirelessly traveling in the United States, educating people about inhumane labor abuses in the garment factory that thrilled to a settlement in 2002. So, in many ways, my story is a hopeful story because I struggled so hard. And through my struggle, it achieved what I call the real victory. The good news is that through citizens' action, we are taking now a huge lead on how to eliminate sweatshop around the world. The bad news is that the kind of harassment that I suffered in Saipan is the same kind of harassment that millions of women around the world are suffering all the time. Those women who are working in the export processing zones in Asia, in the Philippines, in Indonesia, in Thailand, in Vietnam. Not only those, the maquiladoras along San Diego, Tijuana borders to El Paso, Texas, and is that Ciudad Juarez, the border? In where? In El Salvador, in Honduras, in Guatemala, they are all over. Not only they are all over, even though here in the United States, go out and check in Philadelphia. There is. How about the thing that happened in New York, in Long Island, New York? I don't know if you were familiar with the Triangle Shirt Factories that probably how about in as big a room as this, like 30 workers, we were being trapped inside the garment factory while the building catches on fire. All of them died. So it was, I think, in the early part of the 1990s. So even though in the United States we have a lot of sweatshops, in Los Angeles, in which it is the sweatshop capital of the United States, in San Francisco, they are all over. Especially who are their employees? Mostly undocumented workers. Mostly workers that cannot speak your language and understand your laws. So, and even though, as I've said again, women here in the United States are being mistreated, they don't have the right to organize a union. They have no health care. They are receiving poverty wages. And they are also suffering from slave labor conditions. So what kind of democracy we have wherein people are living in poverty? Yes, I do understand that people need jobs. But people need jobs that they could organize themselves and being treated well, treated with respect and dignity. Jobs that they could allow workers to organize a union to protect themselves and have a better lives for their family. That's why right now we need to build an international movement for a change. We need to build the labor movement, global unity between workers like me, students like you, faculty members, activists, environmentalists, religious groups, and other people's organizations. Because this will help workers, because we will create a demand or market for sweat-free garments, and therefore it will lead more to no sweat factory, and therefore give workers more opportunity to work under the dignified condition. So I know there's a lot of work going on here in Dickinson College, but there's a lot of things that you could do. As a consumer, you have a power. What you could do when you go back home is to raise your roommates or your community about how can we get involved? What are the things that we could do to help out? Another thing is we could do is to build a coalition of diverse organizations such as union, religious group, students. Create like a student against sweatshop chapter here in Dickinson. And also, what you could do, I will tell you a little bit tonight. One of the ways is to let your school adopt the Workers' Rights Consortium. So, how many of you are familiar with the Workers' Rights Consortium? Only a few. Workers' Rights Consortium is one of the alternatives how we can help to eliminate sweatshops around the world. The Workers' Rights Consortium is a non-profit organization created by colleges and university administrations and labor experts like Global Exchange. The WRC aids in the enforcement of the Code of Conduct with the provision of living wage should be maintained by example by the Dickinson College. And then the purpose of this code is to ensure that workers were being treated with respect in the factories that produce clothing and other logos that bear the logo Dickinson College. I'm going to tell you a story. When I was here in 2000, the towel that I used at the Hartman House was just a regular towel. I was surprised yesterday when I got back to the Hartman House, I noticed that their towel even have an embroidered logo like this, Dickinson College. So, and I know that the apparels that Dickinson College are selling have a branded logo on it, athletic uniforms, cap, backpacks, and etc. To have a better alternative, you could talk to your purchasing department to have them join the Workers' Rights Consortium. And as I've said again, there are more than now 400 colleges and universities who were affiliated with the Workers' Rights Consortium. So aside from the mission of the Workers' Rights Consortium is to investigate the working conditions in the factories producing your collegiate logos and uniforms and inform about the degree of the code of conduct compliance at the factories where you get your logos. Aside from that option, I have another option on how to eliminate sweatshops by having your college, when are they are already, when example, the Dickinson College already signed on with the Workers' Rights Consortium, the next step is you have this adopt this designated supplier program. So now that the United Students Against Sweatshops all over United States is demanding that Dickinson College, for example, commit to sourcing of their apparel from a set of designated supplier factories that have demonstrated full and consistent respect for the rights of the employees. When a college signs in to that, this DSP program, it pledges that within 3 years, that the university or college will license their apparel, about 75%, where workers have a democratic representation and receiving a livable wage. So that is one of the campaign what we're doing right now in schools and around the world. Another thing that you could do to help out on how to eliminate sweatshop, like we need to work locally first before going to outside of Carlisle or going to other states. And one of the campaigns of global exchange right now is to pass laws that make government purchases sweat-free. It is especially important to expand the gains made at sweatshop movement against sweatshop that global exchange has helped for so many years. So our tax dollars buys a lot of products, from policemen's uniform, firefighters' uniform, what else? The bus drivers' uniforms, the hospital gowns that they use in public hospital. I don't know if you have public hospital here in Carlisle. And even though to the public, to the flags that they fly over the public buildings. So to put this buying power to work for workers' rights, first what we could do is to build a coalition of diverse people. Build a coalition of religious organization, union members, community, ordinary people like you, so that you could get a very huge support from this organization. So such legislation will ensure that the government monitoring of these factories builds on our earlier work for textile manufacturers to clean up their act and our successful lawsuit against the garment factories. Another option, what you could do, is to, aside from the sweat-free campaign, I want to tell you, I'm so proud to tell you that the sweat-free campaign that we're going at Global Exchange, we're doing it nationwide. San Francisco signed with this, which has a very strong specific of the elements of the ordinance, including by local preference, meaning to say that we will not buy goods from China, so that we could easily go and check the location of these products. So we have that option, buy local product, and giving more opportunity for the community members of San Francisco to have a better job. And of course, a livable wage. In San Francisco, the minimum wage is 8.80 cents. Unlike here, probably it costs the federal law, it's like 5.25, if I'm not mistaken. So, and just recently, a month ago, a sweat-free ordinance in Portland, Oregon, signed up for this sweat-free ordinance. And we have a lot of ongoing campaign right now going around the United States. In fact, the state of Pennsylvania signed up for a sweat-free procurement ordinance last 6 months ago. But it's not yet implemented because they were drafting the elements of the ordinance and stuff they were preparing. So those were the programs that we have in Global Exchange. And of course, another alternative, what you could do, is to adopt fair trade. Who among you knows what's going on about fair trade? I'm glad, so glad, at least you have. Fair trade store, just like, do you have a 10,000 villages here in Carlisle? There is. Good. So fair trade means an equitable and fair partnership between the consumers in North America. North America means to say that they were the rich countries around the world. Rich countries who are a member of the group of eight, G8, which means United States, Great Britain, Canada, France, Japan. What else? Denmark. What else? Germany. And their latest member was Russia. So the group of eight countries. And then the producers in Asia and other parts of the world, or in the global south, meaning to say poor countries. Our fair trade program supports producers in their efforts to build a strong community, improve the quality of life. And at the same time, we give consumers, a chance to purchase high-quality products made under fair labor conditions. So these are some fair trade criteria. Being open to public accountability, just like with Workers' Rights Consortium. It should be open for full public disclosure where these clothing were being made, where those cocos were being picked. Not only cocoa, the cacao, that it's a fruit that is, they try to, produce through making of chocolate. We call it in the Philippines cacao. So aside, under the fair trade criteria, opening employment opportunities for advancement. So, meaning to say that there's a possibility for you to be promoted. Aside from that, engaging in an environmentally sustainable practices. Aside from that, a code of conduct that includes the provision of living wage in it. There's no child labor and etc. and a lot of things. So, as a consumers, you do have a lot of power. We could make a huge difference. If you want to get started on how to have an anti-sweatshop movement here, and I know that there's efforts with the Students for Social Action ongoing here, are doing something to get Dickinson College purchase sweat-free campus logos or clothing. Now, I would like to open up for question and answer portion.
Thank you very much for your talk. I just would like to know a little bit more about the conditions that you worked under. Maybe also what was the youngest worker there. If you could just talk a little bit about that to really make us realize how bad the situation was.
Okay, in Saipan where I experienced, all of us were about 21 years old. Unlike in other documentaries that I've seen Makiliapolis, behind the labels, what else? Made in LA, the latest movie that we have. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but if you want it, I can send a copy to you from Global Exchange, the Made in LA. By the way, just to tell you, L.A., Los Angeles, is the sweatshop capital of the United States. So you will see everything down there. Any other questions? Yes.
Hi. I was just wondering if you think that sweatshop conditions should be improved and workers should have the ability to form unions and have like better, like shorter hours or just better conditions in general, or should sweatshops be totally eliminated altogether?
Yes. What I'm saying is, after we brought the lawsuit, the conditions are totally improved right now. So to go more far beyond what we're doing, getting schools, getting the cities, what you could do is include your community or your relatives, try to educate them, and that would make a big difference. You see, before we started in the college campuses, and now we went over even though through high schools and elementary schools, and now we're getting the public, the city, the state, to hold accountable under which the garments or textile apparels that they were using.
I was wondering if after the legal framework was improved, after your lawsuit, did any of the companies in Saipan shut down? Did you see any layoffs of workers because they couldn't afford to pay as many? Did you see anything like that?
Yeah, a little bit. But mostly factories were still there. As I've said again, they can't just close their factories. It's because how do workers going to pay their loans from this recruitment phase? So, and under the lawsuit, they can just do that, like cut and run. No, they're still there. The conditions, I'm proud to say, was being improved. Like, women now are allowed to have their families or be pregnant, and they have medical insurance in which they're going to deliver their babies. The companies were paying their medical fee or other things. No more barbed wires, no more rainwater to drink. And overtimes right now are allowed like more than eight hours. Like the total per week, we should be working only 48 hours. Unlike before, 48 hours is only 2.5 days for us to do the work.
You spoke how the U.S. has instilled laws after this lawsuit to improve conditions in sweatshops, but you haven't really addressed what the international community is doing, if anything, to improve worker conditions in sweatshops in countries such as China.
See, international communities, you told me, example in Europe, you will see a lot of fair trade stores in Europe right now. So why did I know that? During the weekend, I am working at the fair trade store in the University of California, Berkeley. So especially during this point that, or before this month or 2 months ago, the freshmen are bringing their parents to see probably where their daughters are studying, what are the conditions, etc., blah, blah, blah. And they come to me and said, "Oh, we've been looking for fair trade stores, only a few in the United States." And I said, "Yes, we are just beginning to do something better. Better alternative, like bringing more fair trade stores or educating more public or what else? Doing these lawsuits and protests and public education and a lot. That now, as I could see, help more than millions of workers around the world."
You said that we as consumers have a lot of power, but there's like a lot of Americans who like still struggle, you know, with mortgages and lots of credit card debt. and we're still part of this system too. We've got to make a living, and we still have to try and, you know, make money and get by, and we can't always afford, you know, to buy things at fair trade prices. And I mean, it's kind of an expensive cause to have. How would you suggest maybe getting past that?
What I could say is I know if you're going to buy from cheapest store like Walmart or Target, like, to example, for a case of cereal, it's more than, like, let's say, $2 lower from the price actually of, like, a small convenience store down here. If we, the people, want to get involved, including the governments to get involved, and I do think that we could do something to change or to improve the conditions. I will cite you an example. In San Francisco, they didn't allow Walmart. There's no Walmart in San Francisco because of the resistance of the community. Not only community, the schools, the students like you. Aside from that, the lawmakers itself. If we will adopt the same thing, I think little by little, from workers' perspective, the conditions of workers around the world will be improved.
I was just wondering, when you started to organize the workers at the factory, why didn't the company try to silence you? Like, you know, I mean, I was also wondering if you might have to fear for your life.
Yes, they tried to silence me, but by bribing me money. They tried to silence me, promising that they were going to bring me to the United States and have a better job. Promises that they will be, I will be promoted for a higher position. But I said no. It's because if I go and grab that, it's only me who will benefit that. What will happen to my coworkers? No, no. I cannot forgive myself just to get those very good privileges that I should be receiving. It's because I know how my coworkers are living in this kind of situation. And besides, in my country, I was very involved in the social justice issue, especially coming from a Catholic school. You know how in my country it is very progressive. The church is very progressive there.
You said that like, we should buy things that we see that are made in the United States and not things that we see that are made in China. How do we know that the things that we buy that say they're made in the United States aren't made in places that you mentioned in LA where they have children working? Like, how do we know exactly what we're endorsing?
So right now, as I've said again, the labels now doesn't come made in the USA only. Example, the label was labeled, or the clothes made in Saipan are now labeled made in the CNMI USA, meaning to say CNMI, or what we say that it's Commonwealth of Northern Marianas Island, in which Saipan is the capital. And you can see at the back of our shirts, there are RN numbers. Those RN numbers, you could track it to the website of Co-op America, and you will see where those RN numbers were being made. Every factory has a code at the back of the shirt that says RN. So that's how we can track down where are these clothing were being made. Or if you're going to buy them from cooperatives or fair trade organizations, just like 10,000 villages, 100%. It's made under the good condition. I was with Jing, where he's there. the group of her went with us for lunch, and we were talking about the plight of the workers in China. She said yes, especially those factories who are huge. Example, who make clothes for the Walmart. Yes, I agree with her that if only small shop, like let's say 100 people were working, this under this small scale business, workers can be treated well, unlike in those huge ones in which workers, even though in China, comes from rural area. Example, when they apply for a job, let's say, for example, in Guangdong, which is the southern part of China, when they try to apply work down there, same thing. They're going to use recruitment fee or finder's fee for them to get a job in the city.
That when I am speaking with people about the issue of low-wage labor, sweatshop labor, that I find myself making a moral argument about conditions and the quality of life. And people I'm arguing against are often making an economic argument stating that people who work for sweatshop wages are actually better off than they would otherwise be. And I don't buy that, but I'm interested in knowing how you would respond to that.
Well, do they say that, working in sweatshop is much better? Yeah. If they go and yes, it's always an argument that having a job is better than a sweatshop job. Yeah, it's an argument, but we know, even though adding a few cents or a few dollars to the product, if it is made in Saipan, that would be a huge difference. You see, I know this corporation, just like, for example, Nike. They sell Nike shirts for $100, let's say. And they do and get products done in China. So only few cents, that probably they pay $1 a day in China. So, and then they pay for a lot of advertising, just like Tiger Woods, right? If they can only, eliminate the advertising cost and give more, a little bit, to workers, I think workers can leave. Workers like me could send my kids to school like this. Yeah, it's always been an argument, and that's why we keep on struggling to fight that and make sure that these sweatshop conditions will be improved. So we targeted Saipan, we did first Saipan, and now we're thinking also of getting China. We are right now in the process of a strategy, getting Walmart to be held accountable for their products. Little by little. I know we just did Saipan to launch it. Or Saipan is just an example on how we did it perfectly. Any other question? From the people in the extra room. And I would like to let you know that I brought some literatures about global exchange, who we are, what we are doing, the sign-up sheet that you signed. I'm going to give you the electronic newsletters or whatever you need. And wherever you need me to finish like a research paper regarding globalization and sweatshop, please don't hesitate to email me at chie@globalexchange.org.
Before we end, could I just ask one more question that I'm not sure you've quite answered for the audience, I think is very important. It's just, if you could tell us a little bit about why you joined the trade union in the first place. Why did you decide to lead a trade union organization in Saipan to begin with? What were you experiencing there that led you to do that?
Okay. The reason why I did organize, try to organize a union, because what I had decided before that only a union could help us, just in case Saku Corporation will kick us or get rid of us. Like signing, because we tried to do a step like this to have our petition signed that we could air like grievances, like they should be only allowed us to work and give us some time to rest or buy our local produce and stuff like that. But we drafted and let the people sign with this petition. But it happened that the Saipan Department of Labor and our personnel officer, they were brothers and sisters. So what happened? The petition or the complaint was being dunked in a trash can. So I did find myself, what can I do to continue fighting? Then I met these guys who were union members in hotel industry. Because in Saipan, in CNMI, there's only two industries that's so big to support the whole island's job. Another thing is that is the hotels. So they said, why don't you join? And that's the time that I let a petition card going on, and we have like 80% of the total Saku Corporation employees signed on with that petition. And then that time, we get help from the federal government, from the United States, U.S. Department of Labor, particularly the National Labor Relations Board. And after we get that, a lot of intimidation, a lot of non-renewals of my coworkers' contract, I got help again through the United States Equal Employment Commission. And that is the only way that we could get a pro bono lawyers and stuff like that to continue fighting this.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment. Thank you very much for giving us so many options in terms of what we can do in this community. It was just very disturbing, also from the thoughts and the questions I've heard, to feel that many of us are in that point in which we have to choose whether to buy things that we think are convenient for us, or but at the same time are so jeopardizing for other people, or buying something that is just morally correct to us, and we cannot, you know, actually see beyond them. So yes, thank you. I just think that based on what you just said, especially people in here who live in like me and other students and my peers who live in such a wealthy environment, can for sure take a couple of hours per week to find out our own information on the topic, and also for sure do something for our own community. So thank you for those options.
Thank you for coming in tonight.
Excuse me, one second.
On behalf of the Clark Forum and our sponsors this evening, I'd like to present you with this token of our appreciation, which is a plaque of the poster that was used to advertise tonight's event.
Oh, thank you, guys.
That concludes this evening's program. The table just outside has all the pamphlets on global education, all those things. So thanks for coming.
And guys, if you want to join the group Students for Social Action, go and talk to these girls right now who are running this organization to continue our work to get this Kinson College sweat-free.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.